Hi, everybody. This is Rita Prazeres Gonçalves, linguist and senior talent management consultant. In this podcast, I have conversations with language professionals who are willing to talk about their experience, their knowledge, and their strategies to navigate the ever-changing language industry. This is also a space where I can learn and share my insights. I have been working with LSPs, enterprise clients, and freelancers for over 20 years, and my main focus is talent management for the localization industry. Let's get to know some of the most interesting people in our field: translators, company owners, association representatives, and community builders. This is The Language Worker. This podcast is also available as a video cast on YouTube. Hi, everybody. Here we are, another Friday morning. So I always try to do it on Friday mornings because everybody seems to be a bit more relaxed. And as you know, I was saying to Rachel, this is like my private coffee shop, virtual coffee shop, right? So it's like the idea, as you know, is to always have a relaxed conversation with a guest that works in the language industry from many perspectives. And today we have an LSP owner. So Rachel, thank you so much for accepting the invitation. Be here.
Looking forward to talking to you. It's nice to have an invitation, so thank you.
Okay, so great. We already discovered that we are cat ladies, so we're crazy cat ladies. I have five, Rachel has seven. I mean, seven, yeah, it's real. So some of us have this many cats. So this is basically the conversation we've had so far because, as you know, I always enjoy getting to know people as we record the episode because I think it's a bit more natural, a bit more, no pressure, I suppose. And so this is what we're going to do. So we have not talked about work at all, and this is what we're going to do now. So Rachel, thank you so much. I suppose you're British, right?
Yes, I am British. I mean, I do have a bit of Irish and Welsh and Scottish heritage, so I have a bit of a mix, but yes, I'm British.
Okay, so I get this all the time. I don't know why I have so many British friends and people that I meet these days. It's an amazing thing, but I seem to gravitate towards British people these days, so it's happening. So of course, as you know, I love the ins and outs of the industry, and I always like having, LSP owners because I believe that they are people who are in a unique position to actually talk a little bit about what is really going on in what, as I call it, the commercial life of languages, right? So, but we're going to go back a little bit because I don't know anything about Rachel. So let's see what happened. What kind of child were you? Were you interested in languages? Did you enjoy communicating? Were you a super talkative person like I was? What was the story? How did you become interested in this realm of things to begin with? So did it start in an early age?
Well, it did. I mean, I was an incredibly shy child, actually, and I was a bit quirky. So I did find it quite difficult to make friends when I was younger because people thought I was a bit strange, to be honest. The friends that I did gather were like-minded. That's all I could say. My childhood was an interesting one. My mum basically brought my brother and I up on her own. So in those days, that was quite a rare thing. My mum actually, to make some extra money, was doing translation work in the evening.
No.
Yes, she was. So she worked during the day. She trained to be a teacher for a while. She tried all sorts of things, but she stuck to the translation because she'd studied languages. And at that point, she'd studied ancient Greek, Italian, French, German, and some Russian. So she decided
Okay.
she'd use some of her skills, and she self-taught herself Dutch and Scandinavian languages as well. So she found that she was in quite a lot of demand. And then she met my stepfather because he owned a translation company, only a small one at the time, many years
Are
ago.
you serious?
Yeah. So I couldn't understand why this man kept coming around to the house all the time. And he was really friendly and he was bringing my mum work. But then he was also, basically romancing my mother, which I wasn't aware of because I was too young to be aware of it. And then suddenly my mum said, "We're moving house," and we moved in from a little place where I had an idyllic childhood there, actually, because it was one of those, it was in the days when you could go and walk freely without worrying about anything. I'm sure the world was just as bad, but you didn't hear about it, so you had this freedom that we don't have now. And he was a translator too, so I then lived in this crazy household where they spoke different languages to each other to try and so we couldn't understand what they were saying sometimes. So we did pick up quite a
Of
lot
course, I do
of
that at home,
German.
obviously.
And when you're a child, you have this sponge brain. So we absorbed it all. So we learned to understand an awful lot of what they were saying. They traveled quite a lot. They took us with them to the conferences because they were interpreters as well. So
Oh my God.
my life completely changed. I'd gone from this barefoot wild child existence running around barefoot on the streets with my friends and my few friends to living in this household where all my friends were welcome. It was like a big non-stop party life for a few years, to be honest, but they worked really hard at their jobs. So they started a small business. My mum at this point was translating 9 languages into English. And my stepdad was translating too. He was German. So they started this business, and that I got into it because I lived and breathed their company. You know, every lunchtime was discussing, when I was at home, obviously, discussing the business. It was in the evenings. My brother and I were really bored listening to it after a bit because it's always the same topic. They never asked us how we were or what we'd done at school. It was always, well, what do you think we should do? You know, we've got this big deadline coming up. And they used to just talk about work. So, eventually, they were looking for somebody to help run their business because they were busy translating. And I was looking for a job. I wanted to be a graphic designer, actually, and that's what I trained in. But I decided that I'd give it a go because I'd always loved languages. I did study them to A level. I went and worked with them. And that was a baptism of fire because I think people believe that if you work for family, you get it's cushy. They were tough. They were really tough. So all these crazy people I've been brought up with and all this freedom, when it was work, it was a completely different attitude. But I learned an awful lot from that. So I did that for a while. And then I decided I wanted to work for a bigger company and learn more about the industry. Because I then found as well, doing that work, I started to communicate with people and my shyness just disappeared. And if anything, actually, I was completely the opposite. I can talk to anybody now, which is quite a nice thing. So that really helped as well. And I thought, I'm going to go and work for a bigger company and learn some new skills. And I just told them, and they were very, you know, they said, go for it. You know, why not?
Did they think it would also benefit them because you would bring in new ideas? Because I'm still trying to recover from the fact that you were brought up like that, because I had never heard such a thing, right? Like, I tried to find out when I talk to people what the story is. And usually, of course, there's a lot of things in common. And I've never, ever spoken to anyone who has such a background, because I'm like, oh my God, we can just leave now.
To me, it's just normal. I don't really think about it. But when I talk to
My
people,
God.
I say, we've had a really interesting life. And I think, have I? But I mean, I have. When I look back now, I realise that it was, I'm really grateful, actually, to be honest, because I'm
I
quite
bet.
A free-spirited person. So I'm a hard worker. I work hard and I'm very determined. If I want to do something, I will do it. On the other hand, if I don't want to do it, I can be very stubborn. But that's another matter. But yeah, when I want to push something forward, I'll graft for it. So I decided to work on my own, and then they sold go off on my own. They sold their company to the company that I went to work for. So they sold the business, and then the company I went to work for, they trained us in Trados, which was new-ish at the time.
I can imagine.
And they selected it. Yeah, that was a long time ago.
I mean, when was it? Because we have to kind of have some sort of a time frame here, just in case, because we're talking about Trados. Oh, I see.
About 1998, 1999, so it was quite early still in Trados's history. I mean, they had been around, but the company decided that they wanted to, you know, invest in this software as it was a new thing at the time, translation memory, and they selected 6 people to go and learn about it and become what they called their techies, and they selected me. Why, I don't know. I had no technical background, and when I first started to go on the course with them, everyone just seemed to know everything, and I just felt like the idiot at the back of the room. But the minute I started to use it, it became really easy. And I thought, I can do this. I'm not great at theory. I'm better at working things out myself. So once I've got the idea in my head, it was fine. So they made me redundant, all of us, actually, the whole office. We were based in Leamington Spa in Warwickshire. But I'd been sitting next to another person who was working on large projects. So I was helping her with large projects, and we were turning over quite a lot of money for the company. And we talked about starting a business because she's actually my co-CEO. Lisa Williams. She's quite well known in the industry as
So you
well.
didn't think about going back to graphic designing, doing any of that? You know, you
No.
really were like, no, I'm all about this language business and this
I
all I
loved it.
can, right?
I loved it. I saw all aspects of it. I saw it from a translator's point of view. I actually audio typed my mum's translations for a few years for a bit of extra money because that's how she got through so much work because she was in demand. She was a technical translator. And in those days, actually, people assumed she was a man because she was a technical translator. And
I see.
we used to have to refer to her as he because people didn't believe that this woman could be doing these engineering and technical stuff, translations. It was a different world. So she, he, basically, I used to do these translations and she started to dictate them into a dictation machine. And then I'd audio type them. So not only am I a super fast typist because of that, which is brilliant, it earned me some extra money, but also you've got a source language next to you and you're watching and the English and you're learning so much. I know so much stuff that's even useful today in terms of technical terminology. So when I started the business with my business partner, I did a lot of the quality checking to start with because not because I'm an expert, but because my language skills are reasonable and the terminology was something that I was fascinated in. And I'm the sort of person that now, I mean, I adore the internet because it means I can look up everything. And I spend my entire day, if I don't know something, I have to find out about it, which is a bit, bit
Yes, of
drives you
course.
crazy.
If we have Dr. Google, why wait, right?
Exactly. So the research used to be different years ago, but
Yes.
yeah, so we started the business with nothing because we were made redundant with no redundancy pay because we hadn't been in the company long enough. My parents had got a garage in the garden that they converted in their house that they converted to so they could work away from their home a little bit to,
That's the
you know.
American style, right? To convert your
Yeah.
garage and create your Googles and your Apples, all of that stuff.
Absolutely. So we started, they gave us that for 2 years initially and said, you can work free of charge, go and do your thing. And they were on site to help with translation queries, certain languages. So that was really useful. And we started with very few clients. A couple of people followed us to where we were going. Though I'm not really supposed to say that because we didn't encourage them. They
That
just
was long
came and
ago.
long time ago. We just literally sat on the phones and drummed up business. That's how we did it. And we had a fax machine in those days.
Of course you did.
So the first job that came through that was a new client was a 40-page fax. And to me, that was the most exciting thing I'd ever seen come out of a fax machine in my entire life because I thought, 40 pages,
I
wow. And
believe
those were
you.
those are the days when we had to do word counts, manual
There's
word
money
counts on
here, right?
documents.
Exactly. Had to do
Yeah, oh,
word
we can
counts.
do this, you know. And over time it built up, but we actually early on, after about 2 years, we got a call from an LSP in the Czech Republic wanting a bigger, well, they weren't so big now, then they are huge now, wanting an English partner. How they found us, I'll never know, but we said, oh, that would be great. And they started sending us work into English.
Wow.
And then we realized that we got to get our quality checking up to scratch because I couldn't do everything quality check. We were quality checking our own stuff with queries from my parents. You know, they were answering stuff and helping out. So the quality was okay. But that was a big thing for us. We had to get the quality under control. And also we were getting so much work in the end that we moved to a small office because we wanted an address that wasn't a PO box any longer at my parents' house. And then we were on our knees really because we were working so hard. I'd got a small child in tow as well, so that was an extra pressure, and I didn't want to let her let my child down. But we just took somebody on in desperation, and that was in 2007. And that person is still with us all these years later.
You have been
So
gathering your people and basically keeping them as your foundation, right?
we've kept quite a few people. We've got a core team of people. I mean, we have the usual turnover in
Yes, of
staff.
course, in recent years, I suppose, or more recent years.
Yeah, because the interesting thing about being around so long as well is you see how things change and different attitudes towards work and different expectations and what you have to provide. And it gets employment laws really complicated now. And that's something we have to navigate every day. And keeping people happy and actually people management is a huge part of the job. And it's a really important part of the job as well. So we have to take care of our people. We also have to make sure our people are taking care of our translators and our clients, because we do value both equally, to be honest, because translators are obviously the people who are working really hard for us so that we can run our business. And our clients are really important, because we want to keep hold of our clients. And we have meetings every week to try and see how we can do things better. It's a massive ongoing improvement thing. But yes, this one person started in 2007. She's now our chief operations officer. And she basically,
but what did you, what was your expectation for this first extra person? I know, out of desperation, but what was the idea?
Yes, the expectation was to train them in a project management role so that we could give them some work to absorb all this work that we were getting. We were having to turn stuff down, which was really sad, because, you know, I cried over that a couple of times, because I wanted to so desperately take on the work and not let someone down. And when, in the early days, you'll take anything because you think you have to. And it's only over time you realise that you have to be a little bit more discerning sometimes and just work on what you can take on that's going to make you money, because you have to make a profit. You've got, especially when you've got staff and you've got people to pay, etc.
Exactly.
We've had a few people stay for a long time. At the moment, we've got our accounts person, who was an amazing lady from Zimbabwe, who came over, and she was the most prepared job candidate we've ever had. And she came for a project management role, but she had no experience whatsoever. So we did the interview, realised that we'd have to train her completely from scratch. But we loved her so much and her attitude that we sat and said, well, what can we give her? We've got to give her a job of some sort. So we gave her a part-time job for a start on a short-term contract. And she was so invaluable the way she is, and the way she's helped us throughout the business. She's just the most incredibly loyal person. She now is our accounts manager. She actually runs our finance team. So she had the opportunity to do vendor management, which she did for a while, and she chose the finance. So she preferred that. So she does all our finance for us. And she now lives in Spain. So, you know, the one thing about hybrid working, which is good, is you can work from anywhere you want.
That's true. But how did you, in those early days when you were in 2007, well, early days for your business, so much, already 5 years or so, right? I guess you started in 2002.
2002, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I guess back in the day, 5 years was still not a long time. Now we feel like it's much longer now. I guess that's the way it goes. But so how did you identify when people asked you what your job was? Because it's a question we have to answer constantly, and it's not so easy sometimes in our situation where we are independent professionals or we have a super small business and people don't really understand the ins and outs of our area. So how would you identify back then when you were asked?
We wore many hats. When you've got a small business, you have to.
Exactly.
So we did a bit of marketing. I did a bit of marketing, some project management. That was quite a big part of it, because somebody had to do the work, and so did my business partner. So we were doing a lot of project management, quality control, translator recruitment, sales, finance, everything really. And you can't do it all. So I think the one thing that didn't happen really was marketing and sales very much, because we didn't really have that much time to do it,
right?
Because we were too busy trying to get the work out. So sales and marketing was something that went on the back burner, and it's so important for businesses to do it, but finding the time when you have to be a jack of all trades is very, very difficult.
And it has changed a lot also for freelancers and everybody involved. It was like you were basically listed somewhere on a portal, and somehow people would find you and contact you. That's how I actually got to be working for Apple. They just found me. I had no idea that they were looking for a Portuguese person in California at the time, right? So and it was about 2008. So I feel that that used to be a little bit more like that. And one of the big changes that we have seen in the industry, of course, probably it goes into any industry, I always say this, but this is the only one I know. So it's like we have now the conscience that we have to somehow be out there, market ourselves, be aware of client needs, client satisfaction, and all this stuff. Because whomever you are in the industry, in 2006, 2007, 10, even 15, I suppose, you would be there in a portal and somehow good or bad, people would contact you and something would happen. And these days, it doesn't go that way, right?
That's right, yes. So yeah, we got a lot of people. I discovered Prose, which was a really good find, and Translator Cafe. That's where we used to recruit some of our
translators. Cafe in the States. That's what they used back in the day. And that's basically how I got all of the jobs that I got, even on site, because I was in California, of course, I would just easily travel in the state. And that's how things happened for me. But it was not like I was marketing myself or anything. I just had a profile there.
Exactly. And then, of course, profiles are great because as you get a good reputation, people give you lovely feedback. So you get the people. So then people check feedback. They still do, don't they? But, you know, these days, unfortunately, with a lot of fake reviews and stuff, it's really difficult to trust some of these reviews.
So life was a bit simpler.
It was a lot simpler. Yes, that is definitely true. So that's how we used to do it. Like you said, on the portals, finding the translators. And we didn't really test translators out to that degree, to be honest. We used to get the work checked, but sometimes we'd do two or three jobs with somebody before we realised that they perhaps weren't up to the standard that the client was expecting. So, I mean, we had a part-time vendor manager, I think, probably around 2010, on a part-time basis to do some recruitment for us to start doing translator testing, etc. But it was very part-time. We've got three people doing it now. So, and one of them is a head of department. And it's a big part of the business. So it's gone from being something that we thought, oh, we could do with a bit of that. That'll be fine.
I was a vendor manager for 8 years, so I know what you're saying.
Wow. That is a job. Really is a job. I did try and do a little bit of it myself. And I was just thought, yeah. How do
it's something
do
I absolutely love. So I still do consultancy and all of that specifically for vendor management because
vendor
it's
management.
One of my big, but yeah.
One of my passions. In the smaller businesses, it was a bit of an unknown thing, wasn't it? So our vendor manager linked up with other vendor managers and we actually had somebody coming in full time and she's really passionate about it. And she did some great newsletters for us and some amazing stuff and got some brilliant translators. And then she went off and she's now going around doing her own thing. And she's fantastic. She appears everywhere. And she asked, oh, it's her again. Hello.
I should know her.
You probably do. I don't know whether I can name her on here. That's the only thing.
Well, you'll tell me later.
Yeah,
I know. It's up to you.
Well, Carmen Cisneros, her name is. So, yes, she's...
I've had her on the podcast. I've had her on the podcast, yes.
I can imagine. Well, she does podcast herself, doesn't she? She's phenomenal.
Don't know. She didn't tell me that, or did she? I don't know. She has her own book and everything. So we did the episode probably about a year ago. Yeah. So definitely I know her. I follow her, of course.
she used to work for us. She was one of our vendors.
I didn't know that.
So
great.
We have some celebrities in our midst, you see. They've gone on to be celebrities.
That's good, right? That's because they've had the chance to develop their skills while they were with you, I guess. So it's definitely part of it.
I think they did, but also I think, to be honest with you, I think we're very lucky when we get people like that. And the minute they turn up in a small business, you know they're not there forever. So you have to make the most of them. Because you know when you get a fantastic person like that, that they are going to go off and fly on their own at some point. And we found that with a few members of staff, actually. Not to say that the people that stay aren't fantastic, because they are. But they're not. They don't necessarily have the desire to go off and work for themselves.
Exactly.
You can sometimes tell that somebody's definitely on a mission and they're going to be, you know, off.
You can tell that they're like they're entrepreneurs, right?
Absolutely. You can sense it. So, yeah. So we had her for a couple of years and she was fantastic. We like working with her. She's good sense of humor as well. Always helps.
I know.
Yeah. So, yeah. So that's really the business we are today is very different. We've had to restructure. We've got 32 people now. So we're not massive. We work for a lot of LSPs as well as direct customers. And we decided to invest in some consultancy to get the business functioning at a different level, because I think you hit a point when you can't grow any further. Even if you've got two CEOs at the top of the business, everyone needs direction. It doesn't matter who you are and how amazing you are. Everybody needs a little bit of direction sometimes, I believe anyway. And we needed some help desperately to sort of get things more structured, because everything was very organic in our business. We didn't have a sales team for a long time, etc. We
so
were very
did you
lucky.
Do you usually go inward, as in look into your team to look for people to then get specific jobs? Basically, I suppose, from what I know from the industry, a lot of people start, for example, as internal translators or project managers, and then these are the people who will, you know, show you their skills and show you who they are, and you can tell that they would be a good fit for this and for that. So you do look. Are you the kind of company that looks first to whatever whomever you have on staff before looking outwards, or how do you mix that? Going out looking for somebody else and somehow, let's say, promoting your people that you already have?
Well, we like to promote people we already have, but that can be quite tricky sometimes, particularly when we've got some.
That's why I
new...
asked.
Oh, okay. Good question then. I think because we love some of the project managers that do amazing jobs, it's really tempting to leave them where they are, but you know that they're going to go if you don't do something and offer things to them. So these days, I would say that we try and do future planning and succession planning. So we're always, if we earmark somebody for something, we'll start to not train them in that role, but drop more of that kind of work in their general direction and just see how they get on. So some people have started off as project coordinators, which is, you know, trainee level, if you like. And then they're the ones, when you spot a talent, you think that person could be a project lead. And in our business, a project lead is somebody who's a manager, who manages a team of people and doesn't do the work themselves. They oversee and they come up with ideas and they plan. So, you know, we do try and promote internally internally if we can. And actually people like to be offered the opportunity to go for these roles. Because years ago, we didn't do it. We used to just automatically go to a recruitment agency or put an advert on LinkedIn and hope for the best. And a few people said, well, why wasn't I invited to do that? I can do that. I've always wanted to do that.
Yes, but I know the feeling. Yes.
But the difficult thing is people don't communicate these things to you and then they get really disgruntled. So, you know, we try and say, look, guys, we've got an open door. If there's anything you want to do, any courses you want to do that might better, you know, improve your skills and also be beneficial to us, then we're willing to make a contribution or pay for it. So we do that. So from time to time, somebody will come up and say, I want to do a course in this. Somebody's just done a course in life sciences translation with the Localization Institute, because that's a subject area that we're covering more and more. And it was to give her an insight into, you know, best practice, etc. And she really enjoyed doing that. And that was great. You know, that was good for her, good for us. So we do try and do that as well. But we try and succession plan, but then when a new role comes along, sometimes we need an external expert. For example, our IT tech team is headed now actually by one of our consultants who came to help us turn the business around.
Wow.
Because she's amazing. So she heads that team. She's our Chief Technology and Marketing Officer. That's her official title, which I've now remembered for the first time. Got it right. But she looks after marketing and tech. And then she's got some fantastic people working with her who she's selected herself through the interview process. She's been a huge part of that. And they're doing things that I can't understand at all. And they're so clever. And I'm thinking, wow, that is just incredible.
Because they focus on that, right? We have to remember that that's the thing. They specialize in that. And then, of course, because you have to think about so many things, it's only natural, I would say, that you wouldn't be an expert in IT, right? It wouldn't be
definitely
possible.
Definitely not. And I think that's another difficulty about being a small business owner. You're not necessarily good at some of the things that you're doing.
I say it all the time. I'm not good at this and that and that, but what else am I going to do? I mean, I have to do it somehow. I have to get it done. So I'll just, you know, go with the punches and then and try to do as what I can. And then it gets a point where things cannot evolve without you getting real experts on certain areas of the business. It's not possible.
That's absolutely spot on. I agree. And I think over the years, we've learned to be a little bit less stubborn, let go of our responsibilities a little bit more painfully sometimes, because you don't, I mean, for example, I love quality assurance and quality control. I shouldn't love doing root cause analyses and things that go wrong, but I do actually really enjoy doing them. But
yes, me too. I understand.
And it's you know, when they used to come through, I'd be, oh, great, I can look into this. But actually, sometimes it's a complaint, so it's not always good. But then you always learn something from it. And as long as you learn, then that's great. And you can't be perfect. It's quite scary making mistakes. And sometimes, we, you know, as business owners, we've made some not huge life-changing mistakes, but we've made mistakes that we certainly wouldn't repeat.
Because now you have been through the process and you know that you could have done it differently. But back then, how could you, right? If it hadn't happened. I guess we have to think about that all the time, because it's like, why didn't I do this? Why didn't I should have known better. But I guess it's not possible, right? Because
it is impossible. And hindsight is a beautiful thing, isn't it? Always. Also
true.
And the thing I like about a root cause, doing those, well, I used to, was searching for the reason. Sometimes you'd think, oh, I can't work this out. And suddenly you'd find it. And it was always something really small, usually, that set off this catastrophic series of events that ended up being something that could have been avoided. But in a way, we learn from that. And I must say, we don't have that level of complaint from clients now, or think a lot of these are internal as well, because we're ISO certified. We also have to report internal non-conformities, and those are things that go wrong before the client is aware of it, and then when the client gets the job, they're not aware of it. But internally, we log them, and if it's a training issue, we will run training. So we are very good. We do what we say we do, because a lot of ISO, you know, you think you can say what you want really in a manual, can't you? But you have to prove that you do it as well, and there has to be a point to it. It's not just an exercise to give you a nice ISO certification. You have to live and breathe it as well.
And processes like these days, how can you live without them if things are going to be seen from all possible angles in all parts of the workflow, right? So how do you, it's like these days, the process is so complicated, so many people involved and so much technology. And, you know, of course, like I always say, there's within the spectrum, there are people who are still implementing these things for the first time, obviously. So it all depends on how you conjugate with what kind of clients you actually get. So if you are a more visible, not necessarily bigger in size, but a more recognizable LSP, then you have a lot of responsibility, because people will have expectations from you. And also the type of clients that you have tend to be more informed clients, as I call them, right? So you can have, as a project manager, I worked as a project manager too, of course, and I loved it. And one of the cases I worked for TransPerfect. So it was the overview on how the world works, basically. And it's like that, right? You get very informed clients. Some of them wanted to have full-blown interviews with project managers before the project even started, to ask all sorts of questions, ins and outs. More of them, some of them, if I was involved, it was because it was language-related questions, obviously. But, you know, I guess that's the big difference between being more recognized and less recognized. It's like you get a lot more clients that are more informed, because you obviously are more visible, and so people expect things from you. And quality is not even a selling point anymore, right?
Because it's an expectation. It's an expectation.
It has to
be. If you say quality is good, well, why wouldn't it be? I'm paying you, you know. So
exactly.
And it is a fair point, but actually getting the quality right is a huge, expensive process. And also you want to be the best at what you do, and you the people that are dedicated to doing that all day long, they want to get the recognition as well, that even though it is an expectation, it's they worked really hard to make sure that it happens, and they work with their vendor managers, etc. But I also think that years ago, a lot of the clients weren't informed about translation. I think translation in the earlier days was very much a commodity, and people used to come and throw something at you or deliver it in person. I mean, we hand wrote on drawings at one point for people, translations with a pen.
I believe
you. So, and they were happy with that, whereas now there was no way. But they also, because I think translations become something that people are becoming more aware of generally, they all have a little bit of knowledge about it. So, you know, when we first used Trados, for example, initially, we used it for our own benefit to up our profits a little bit, because we give some discount to clients based on Trados, but we keep a little bit for ourselves. Well, you can't do that now, because they all know what it is. They all know what translation memory is. They also now expect, they assume you're using AI on their translations. We get a lot of people coming to us and saying, oh, do Google Translate and all this stuff. So we'd say we don't actually, but, you know, And then, of course, there's the joys of MT and then MTPE that's come in. That's a fairly new thing. Translators don't particularly like doing the editing side of that. They prefer to translate from scratch.
Right.
So there's a lot that's changed, isn't there, really? But yes. Clients are really savvy now. You can't baffle them with terminology or, client. We have translation speak, don't we? And we tend to, amongst ourselves, use certain terms, but clients now understand exactly what you're talking about. That can be tricky.
Exactly. Like I always say, I mean, you can get away with it, but what kind of clients are you serving? It all depends on what kind of clients you're serving. Because if you're going to go, I mean, I usually work in software localization, which is one of the things that I love. I like the extremes. Like I like esoterical sciences, and then I like...
Wow.
So it's a... Right. But that's me. But that's how it goes. It's like these clients are very demanding. They cannot work with just anybody. It has to be an LSP that it's very, very prepared in many levels. So I'm going to ask you, who do you have as internal teams? Do you have a DTP team? Do you have a translators team? Obviously you have a PM team, obviously, and vendor manager and all of that, but do you have like DTP on site? Do you, not on site as in literally like it used to be, but do you have internal translators, or is that something in the past, or you've never had them maybe except for your parents?
Well, yeah, they were the only ones.
And yourself.
Really. And that's now, well, and we both, you know, have experiences of languages. So linguists, but not translators necessarily. I've got quite a lot of knowledge, but even so, I wouldn't ever say that I've got the skills of a translator because I've seen what translators do. But in our company, we did have a whole review team at one point because that served the business at the time. Mm-hmm. And we had five reviewers who all specialized in different fields, and they would check everything that came through. Mm-hmm. But that's not an efficient way of doing it. We weren't passing on the cost to the client, so we had to do things a different way. So we have a QA team now of two. Mm-hmm. And those QA teams basically work with the translators directly, the freelancers, and they build relationships with them and they provide feedback. But they make sure that when they're providing feedback, they do it in a respectful way so that the translators understand that it's not criticism, etc. Because I think a lot of translators take things to heart when you don't like something. But we also allow them to have their feedback. We don't cut them dead and say, right, you've got to do this. Because we used to get that from some people, some of our LSP clients in the past. Mm-hmm. Our word is final, and you could see that they were not always right, and you can't argue because they're the client. So
of course.
So they work, the QA team works with freelancers, say building up relationships, helping them with terminology, answering queries, etc. So that's only a small team, it's a team of two at the moment, but they're really busy. We have a vendor management team. They are really busy. Vendor management team, three people in vendor management. They do active translator recruitment. They put teams of people together for our project management team. Our project management team is divided into different sectors, etc. So we have three project leads, and each of them has 4 to 5 project managers that work on the project.
Is it by vertical or by language families, or how do you divide your PMs? I'm always curious about that because there's different policies. Some people, it's not like that. You're just assigned a project and it's in a certain vertical usually, and then you work with every language combination. But I've also worked at places where they actually divide people using that language combination or language family kind of distinction. So how do you do that? How do you manage that?
I think if we were a bigger company, we would probably do it by language, but we're not. We're quite small still. So we just have particular clients in a team. So we do have a direct client team, but that's actually kind of merging in a little bit more now. So they're the people who look after clients that come to us directly. And we have people who look after our agency teams. And we've got one team that works purely with remote project managers because they work in different time zones. Mm. So they can cover... They're based in different countries as well, so they can cover different time zones, and they work on a certain type of project. We've got one client that's so huge that one team is dedicated to them and their work, but they also do other bits as well, because even though we get work from this client every single day, you can't just be that top heavy in a team. And we do a lot of cross training. Mm-hmm. So between teams, they also know how to do other work as well, and they have refresher training on that to make sure that they're up to date with things. Every client has a quick guide assigned to them. So each client has their expectations, their basic workflows, what kind of deadlines they have, etc. So there's a bit of a almost like a profile of each individual client.
Right.
And so when a project manager takes over or have to do holiday cover, for example, they have to go to the quick guide, they have to study it, they have to make sure they understand the expectations. And then the project leads help them with any queries. So the project leads know these clients inside out. So they can say, oh, that person, you've got to be mindful because blah, blah, blah. They like a response within 10 minutes. You've got to make sure you go back. So it's a tricky business to work in, isn't it, really, to get it right? But it's so tricky because there are so many different factors involved in anything. So I think, you know, I think we do okay. So we've got project leads. Then we have a management team above the project leads. So we've got an operations manager who oversees everything, but she also does account management. So she's the person who gets in touch with clients to make sure they're happy, answers any queries. She rings up vendor managers and appropriate people in businesses to say, right, we also offer this service. Are you interested? Can you give us more languages in this project? I've noticed this project's got a language combination that we do. So she reports 3 times a week to say, oh, by the way, I've managed to get us a 100,000 word project from so-and-so because I told them that we do this new service and they're interested. So in a way, she's sort of semi-sales and semi-operations, but it's more of account management because it's existing clients that she works with. We have a sales team of 3. They work with direct clients and they have their own way of structuring. I mean, I think actually sales in our industry is really difficult. They're like gold dust, new clients, aren't they? They're like gold dust.
Yes, I was very close. I was very close with the sales team when I worked in the big one. And it's unbelievable. I mean, you cannot even believe what's happening there. The kind of knowledge these people have and the way that they have to maneuver in order to make things work. So I still have quite a few friends that do that. And it's like so inspiring because it's just insane.
It's insane and tough and something that would make me cry probably if I ended up doing that for a few weeks. So there's that. And then we've got a top management team, which is obviously 2 CEOs. And then we've got our operations manager, COO, and then our CTMO, the two people, Chief Technology and Marketing Officer. Said it again, right?
I know, that's really hard. Such a mouthful. All the letters and all that.
Exactly. And we're getting them the right way around as well. Sometimes I don't. But yeah, and then we've got the operations as well. I'm trying to think if there's anybody else I've missed, but I think that's all of us pretty much covered. Oh, technical team. How can I forget them? Yes, they're incredible. They're amazing. We've just been nominated for an award, actually, which we'll be announcing soon for technology innovation award from, I can't say anything because it's not out there yet.
Okay.
But
that's
we've been
really
nominated.
That's really complicated because I mean, who is not trying to get innovation going within the industry? It's like everybody's just thinking about that. Like, so if you guys were nominated, I guess you did something that is a little bit more either advanced or interesting or original than.
I hope that's how it turns out. I mean, we haven't won the award yet, so we'll wait and see. But the fact that we've actually been, we're finalists is a really nice thing.
It's like the Oscars, you know, it's like they say Oscar nominated actress, right? You don't have to win to be already referred to as someone who has a relation with the Oscars, right?
Yeah.
So
yes,
that means something already.
It does. It's a big privilege to actually get into that position. So That's our technology team, really. Tech is the future, isn't it? I'm so glad we've got.
And the past and the present, I guess, right? Because it's always been that way. It's just, I think people in our industry have a privileged view on how things have been evolving because we have been dealing with it since always.
Yes, right? That's very true.
Since always, because what's in the internalization process, right? It's like for us, it's a given. We don't even think about it because it's just part of everything that we do. And it's always been that way. If you were a translator in the 60s, you have to deal with technology. If you were in the 70s, in the 80s and all of that, right? Maybe not directly yourself, but you have to know about it. I remember working for this company that were localizing one of the first versions of Windows as we know it these days. And they were like looking into an old computer with everything installed, and then they were checking and all of that. So it has evolved in the way that we have been doing it, but we've always been heavily involved with, you know, technology and everything that entails, because or else we couldn't do our work. I don't think people are this aware of things. It's like, no, for us, none of this is new. This is evolution for us, but this is not news, right? So
absolutely. I mean, when I look back now, I mean, my parents were using golf ball typewriters, and those things were, wow, electric typewriters, woohoo, the latest thing.
Exactly.
And then it became word processing. And I know my parents had Wang word processors. That was the first thing that they embraced. And then they used WordPerfect. And then Word became the thing in the industry. And then we went from 8-inch floppy disks to 5-inch floppy disks to 3-inch to nothing or whatever. I can't remember the exact transition, but they had these little plastic things. It was the latest thing. And then modems came into things, CompuServe. I remember being a way of transmitting information, which I found fascinating. In fact, when one of our translators first told me about CompuServe, I dismissed it. I thought, oh, that'll never take off. And that suddenly, look at us now. So that was youthful naivety, I think, back then, whereas I don't take anything for granted now. I just think what's happening at the moment, I think it's going to blow us all away. I think the next thing that's coming
is... It's a daily thing. It's an hourly thing now to understand what is happening. I mean, like I say, depends on what kind of clients work with, what kind of vertical you're in, but usually... majority of the people in the industry have to be aware of everything every hour of the day. So it's complicated. So how have you been navigating this whole scenario of since the so famous introduction, because it wasn't an introduction, but I guess it was a massive introduction of MT and all of that, until now that it seems to culminate into this thing that also evolves every single day? Because of course, the first time I accepted projects that had to do with MTPE was 2007. So it's not like I find it anything new, but I guess I have been involved in processes of implementation of MT much later than that in the companies. So it was very interesting to me for people to actually think about the process and all that. And also, because I was a vendor manager at the time, I had to deal with introducing this supposed new reality to the mass of the translators that we had in the database. So how did you guys...
That's a job and a half. So I don't want
I love
change,
talking about it. I love talking about it. I love talking about it. I love talking about it and love being involved in that, because it's very interesting to me what people think about it, how it actually is, the misconceptions, the, you know, all the things that people think that doesn't make sense or people are right or whatever it is, right? So I like knowing about it, and I like being involved in those processes, because I like the process of thinking and the process of implementing and then the results. So it's very interesting to me. So how did you guys navigate that from having your regular Trados, whatever CAD tools implemented, until then you had to kind of communicate that now this was going to be introduced in at least the vast majority of projects or in a certain...
It's always painful. And a lot of people at the beginning of MT said, this is never going to take off. It won't replace people. It's never going to take off. It won't work. And of course, now it's quite embedded in the workflow. But I think for us, we've been very lucky. We work for a lot of LSPs. Quite a lot of our businesses LSP work. And the benefit...
So that's
of
a given, right? That's a given.
It already comes. You have to learn everything. The amount of software that we had on our systems, because each client has... We were dealing with their client requirements, and they have massive projects. You know, as you know, having worked for one, that's perfect. They have huge projects. A lot of the really big corporations work with big agencies, and they work with people like us because we can put a team together maybe more quickly than if they tried to source individual freelancers themselves. So they just come to us. So they've got tight deadlines. I mean, it's always been deadline focused, hasn't it, particularly for agencies, and they have to do their own bit of work on it at the end as well, so that, you know, we don't get a lot of time sometimes because they need to do what they need to do. But that's
it's very intense on that end too, right? So it's intense for you guys, and then it gets there and it's like almost going back to everything that you started and checking everything and then making sure this, making sure that, more queries, more this, more that, more that. So it's very intense.
So it is at both ends. I really do appreciate that because I know that we do LSOs and things, and they come back and queries come back, and sometimes a client wants to know some more information, etc. So yes, we can see that it doesn't end for us there either. We don't just hand it back. It usually
Exactly.
has some further work that needs to be done on it. But the benefit of working with these people is we've learned so much about technology, something that we perhaps wouldn't have learned if we'd been just working with direct clients and doing our own thing. So part of the reason we got the tech team in, and the tech team is really red hot in our company now. I'm very, very, very inspired by them, to be honest, because they do things that I could never even dream of. When they explain it, it makes sense, but I can't get my head around the way their brains think. I'm thinking, wow, my brain does not think in that way. So when people can do things you can't, it's actually really inspiring, especially when they explain it to you and it makes sense. And you think, well, okay, that's great. Still couldn't come up with these things. So they just basically make, because we work with so many different types of software and different agencies, they put information together, they streamline those processes so that for our project managers, they're not doing as much manual work to try and. So if we get a project, for example, which is, oh, it's a lovely 100,000 words is coming through this afternoon, and then it comes through and it's in 100 different files, and then you've got to do something with it. The tech team basically works to make sure that when the workflow goes through, somebody's not logging 100 different files and they're not having to monitor 100 different files. So we've cut down on the admin for our project managers. So they're doing a lot more project management rather than the admin side of it, which they prefer because the admin side is the bit that's stressful, isn't it? Trying to get it all done and being organized and whatever. So I think from that point of view, we've learned an awful lot. I think that's a real privilege of working with LSPs as a part of the business. It's also, of course, given us the opportunity to work with in verticals that we wouldn't be able to get involved in normally because of the size of our company.
That's
So
what
we
I always
really
say.
are. It's a fantastic opportunity for us. So a lot of work we're doing is life sciences because we've done life sciences work for so many LSPs that actually we have a lot of expertise in that field just from having worked with them. So we're now trying to go and get smaller clients in that field, device manufacturers, etc., which we're having some success with actually, but we're never going to be able to get in with corporations that are really renowned big healthcare companies or anything like that because we can't necessarily service their requirements. These big LSPs have got the resources, but we're happy to be part of that. And in the meantime, we're getting all this lovely software training from them and all the other process training as well. Of course, we've used a lot of that in our own business because they come up with ideas. You think, oh, that's a good thing. We could do that on a smaller scale. So so in a way, we've had the privilege of that. So navigating is difficult. I think AI at the moment is a big, it's a big scary thing for people because there's just, you put the bomb out there, the AI thing, and mass panic happens, and everyone's going off saying, you need to do this, you need to do that, you need to do this, you need to do that. I'm thinking, okay, when this calms down, we'll all have a rational conversation about this and then we'll work out what we really can do with it. So our tech team does a lot of research on that and a lot of looking at processes. So we have a meeting with them every week and they say, oh, this is what we found. We think we should be working with this type of MT. This is a, they test things that we wouldn't normally do. So we're very lucky to have them. And,
What about
I
vendor
think
managers? What's their life like?
vendor managers, they get quite a lot of stick from people.
Really?
Yeah, because very often they build relationships with people, and the nice part about that is they're talking on the phone, and they're outgoing people, the vendor managers in our business. So a bit like yourself, they love talking to people. So in a way, that's a
It's
pleasure.
like
But
a
also,
minimum requirement.
it is a minimum requirement, needing loving talking to people. Yeah, definitely. But they're also having to negotiate rates with them, and that's always a bit of a sore point. Some translators don't, think that we should be asking such low rates of them, etc. But we try and explain our reasoning behind it, and they have a choice. They don't have to take on the work that we do, but sometimes translators do get a bit irate. I think some translators working in isolation as well, they just ring up for a chat sometimes. So I think the VM team also has to be friends with some certain people. And almost often, not a counselling service, because it's not that kind of depth, but it's almost like a mental health
Can
break for
be.
people. Yes, it can be, absolutely. A mental health break for people who are isolated in a way, and they might not see anybody all day or all week, they might be completely alone. So in a way, we offer that as well. And the life stories of people, I mean, I know when I used to chat to translators, I used to know everything about them and they knew everything about me. So it was...
I know. I was already like that when I was a project manager. Can you imagine? In a super fast-paced environment, but it was actually very beneficial for the projects to have that personal relationship. This is what we have to always understand. And because I've always been in positions where I was in really close contact with everybody I worked with, from project managers when I was a vendor manager and people and all of that, that's like a plus. The more personal you are, in good terms, of course, the more you actually understand where people are coming from, and the more they understand your position too. So it's like, I'd say that it's actually a problem that people look at LSPs the way that they do, because there are examples of companies that operate in a certain way, but it's not a universal thing. Like I always say, it's not a universal thing, because there's a lot of companies, even if they're huge, where people can be very close to you. This is just a fact.
Especially
and
if you're
it
working on
works
an ongoing
better.
Project. Yes. Yeah, if you're working on an ongoing project. I worked with a project manager a few years ago now, because I haven't done project management for a long time. I couldn't stand the heat. You know, it was too much for me.
It's the hardest job in the business. This is what I say all the time. The hardest job in the business.
So stressful. It's unbelievable, especially when things go wrong. Oh, gosh. And you sort of, I've lost sleep over projects when I'm doing projects.
Or to avoid that they go wrong, right? To avoid that they go wrong, that you do your best, your best, your best until that 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning, if you have to log from your bed. I remember doing that.
I do too. I'm sitting up till 3 a.m. and then getting back up at 6 to finish off, because I've just needed a couple of hours sleep to get the stuff delivered on time. And when I haven't been able to do it, then crying because I've been so exhausted. and also sad that I couldn't do it. So so
really
from
hard.
That point of view, it is. But I work with some clients, but they're also project managers very often from LSPs. So they understand your pain, even though we're business owners, we were actually working in the business at the time, it was the only way. But I'm still in touch with some of them. I still get happy birthday messages from one in particular, and the odd chat on Facebook from time to time as well. How are you? And it's nice, and I've kept in touch with a few people like that, and staff as well, actually. Our former members of staff, a lot of them we still speak. We still occasionally meet up. It's nice. If you get a good relationship, you can't beat it. I mean, we're at work so many hours a day. And you have to be impartial up to a point, and particularly now as CEOs, we have to be really careful with our staff and making sure that everyone's happy and we're not overstepping the mark by being too friendly and that sort of thing. But I do miss that interaction, I have to say, because we were more of a family-sized business before and everybody knew each other, whereas now we have to take a step back for professional reasons. But I've still got my contacts from the past, and we still have a good natter and a bit of lunch sometimes. It's really nice. And I still do references for some people that worked for me a long time ago, because they want to do a course or something. So those personal relationships you build up make it worth it, make all the pain worth it, actually, I think.
Oh, for sure. Like, it's a business of people. We just see so much technology and all of that. But in the end, what else are we going to do? We just have to be together somehow and try to find the best solutions for everybody involved. So, Rachel, I know you have a lot to do, so I'll let you go. Thank you so much for this. Almost 1 hour.
Gosh, I could have talked much longer.
I know. And we kept, feel free. But I just think that, I know that you have stuff to do, of course. And I'm already thrilled that you accepted to just come and talk about you didn't know what. And as you can see, nothing in particular, but everything at the same time.
Oh, no, it's great. And, I actually find what you're saying really interesting. So I've got a lot out of this, listening to you as well. And I think that's the good thing when you talk to people and you hear different perspectives and where your journey's been come from as well. It's just, it's really inspiring, to be honest. And
it's the whole purpose of this, really, because I do think that people sometimes have a strange impression of people because they have a certain journey and they are now in a certain position. So I think that the idea is just to get to know the person, to see what the real story is, right? But I will never get over the fact that you were raised in a household where there were translators and business owners already in this business, because it's just amazing to me. I mean, I'll never forget this. I can tell you that.
Well, that's really good to hear, because it's every day for me. So I, you know, when
Wow.
I hear that, it's good to hear that
Yeah,
it's
well,
interesting.
my life was completely different, obviously, right? Because it was like none of this was available if it wasn't for school. So that's why I think about school as the thing for me. I really, the most grateful thing that I am in life is to actually have had the chance to easily attend school, right? So that's where it is for me.
Yes.
And for you, it was your family, your whole experience. But you know, we all have our journey and the way things go, and that really also influences the way that we are. But if we, you know, in this industry, I think that what we're missing is this. It's just to get to know each other a little better, understanding what things are, how things actually work, how things got where they were. I think we're missing a lot of the historical
Yeah, well, I think stories
factors.
are great, you know, as well
Yeah.
about people. People want to know people's story.
Of course.
So you're doing an amazing service in a way, doing
Oh,
all these
thank you.
podcasts. I
I
think it's
try.
great.
I try by not trying too hard.
Works, because I felt very relaxed talking to you as well. It's a lot easier doing it that way.
It's been lovely. So thank you so much, and I'll
Thank
see you
you.
around for sure.
Yeah,
And I'll
definitely.
be paying attention to that award situation.
Oh, okay.
Thank you so
Excellent. Yeah,
much.
it'll be announced soon.
Yes, I'm sure. Thank you so much.
Lovely to talk to you. Bye bye.